What this is, like I said, just taking a hatchet to things and just whacking away at them without any thought as to what the implications are. Just like this. It doesn't seem, $6 million is next to nothing in Washington. However, when we talk about fighting crime, holding people accountable, finding out who murdered somebody, that's a big deal right here.
This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Y'allitics.
The camera's over here.
We have multiple cameras, Jason. We have three cameras here,
right
and
now.
I like to address all three of them. we're getting derailed right before we even get out of the gates here. So we're here at Community Beer Company again. We can't stay away from this
place.
They
keep having us back, and it's fantastic.
It's kind of surprising.
It's a beer garden. It is surprising.
Surprising when people say, yeah, come back. We want you back.
It's a beer garden. It's north of downtown Dallas.
Just
off
north,
of 35, or 35 splits with 183, kind of as you're going towards Mockingbird and Love Field, if you ever take 35 mm-hmm. to the airport. Great place. So whoever your contact is here, tell them thank you.
Yeah. And
it's your contact.
And surprisingly, it is my contact.
Yeah.
It's someone who actually likes me.
Surprisingly is the correct adjective there.
So we can count on one person in the community who likes
no,
you.
No. There's two because
you
I like
and
me
that
too.
Person.
Well, you don't miss a trick. There's a reason this guy is where he is. He's a bright guy. We've got District Attorney John Creuzot from Dallas with us today because, you know, Judge, we've been seeing so much going on in these last, you know, you almost
six
have
weeks.
To remind yourself how long it has actually been.
Yeah.
It's been about, 6 weeks, as Jason right. says, a little more than a month since the Trump administration took office. And, I mean, things have been moving at lightning speed when you start talking about firings and money cuts and so on and so forth. It's easy to lose sight of what that affects.
Right.
But that's why we're with you here today.
Yes, and thank you. So, you know, we're going back to shock and awe, which is a war term, right? And here we are practicing shock and awe on the American people, our system of governance, and the money that flows from Washington to various and sundry initiatives around the United States. And so what I wanted to bring to you all's attention to give to the viewers is what's going on in criminal justice and the efforts that we're making to address violent crime that may be threatened with these cuts. So that's what we're here to talk about.
And Judge, I call you Judge. You were a judge in Dallas County before you were elected in 2018 as
Long
district
time
attorney.
Too.
So,
yeah.
Do people still call you Judge?
22 years.
Am I the last one that calls you Judge?
No, most people do.
Okay.
Or they call me District Attorney or DA. And I don't know if DA is District Attorney or dumb. Not quite sure
attorney.
What
I'll
that
call
is.
You Judge.
We'll
yeah.
call you Judge.
I'll call you Judge.
I take
them
no
all.
Confusion.
So I'm on. Wheeler may be on it too. I'm on the daily email list for the White House, and they put out what the president does every day, where the mm-hmm. president's going, his schedule, etc. And every day at 3 o'clock. Almost every day. It says, closed press, the president is going to be in the Oval Office signing executive orders. So Jason said, you know, we've seen that President Trump wants to shrink the federal government.
Right.
People probably don't realize the federal government isn't just the Department of Interior. They
right.
also hand out a lot of money, or the Department of Commerce, or Defense Department, State Department, etc. There's a lot of grants that filter down to counties all across Texas.
States and counties, yes.
States and counties. And at Dallas County District Attorney's Office, you guys rely on this to prosecute cases.
Yes.
So Wheeler's printed out the list here. I have it on my phone. I don't want to be rude and have my phone up here. But
okay.
You printed out the list. And let's talk about the millions of dollars that is
yeah.
at risk right now.
So let me just go down the list real fast for people.
Your list may be bigger than the district attorney's office with all those bullet points you have there.
It is a lot.
Yeah. You should hear his questions. They're a lot longer than this
these
list
These are my
right
questions,
here.
Yeah. these three
okay.
pages.
All right.
So I'm just going to hit the bullet points of the programs and the amount of money. So
federal money.
Yeah, federal money that could be affected is affected here.
Yep.
The sexual assault unit, about $1.5 million. Cold cases, $2.4 million almost. Journalist, the Young Adult Court, almost $1 million. Post-conviction DNA testing, almost $800,000. Behavioral health, almost $500,000 there. Elder abuse, about $75,000 there. And focused deterrence, a little more than $100,000 there. All of these programs in jeopardy and you know, possibly threatened their very existence. And what strikes me in here is not just the breadth of programs that we're talking about here, but also the money amounts, because if you look at it from a federal budget standpoint, it's not a lot of money.
No, it's
if
nothing.
You look at it from a local budget standpoint, it's a ton of money.
Yes, it's a ton of money, and it's a lot of responsibility that's taken away from us, or ability that's taken away from us, to address violent crime, to reduce crime, those types of things. And we know that Dallas has led the nation with multiple years of declining violent crime rates. Mm-hmm. We have led this county, we've led the state, and in some respects the nation, in diversion programs. And that started off as federal money. And the AIM court, the Youthful Offender Court, still gets that money. Mm-hmm. And so these are proven strategies that reduce crime. So usually what people don't realize is, in the district attorney's office, we try a lot of cases. We get 60,000 cases a year. And so when we go to trial on a case, an offense has already occurred. So we're not stopping anything from happening. It's done. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about the rehabilitation programs and focused deterrence, those are the programs that get in front of crime. And those are proven research-based strategies. And part of it is Eddie Garcia's crime plan, the focused deterrence.
Former police chief from Dallas, yeah.
Yes, former police chief. And so when we do that, we're actually stopping crime. So we don't have to have a victim. We don't have to have a defendant. We don't have to have jail population issues. And we have a safer community. So all of this,
and your stats show that this is keeping these people from committing crimes
again. All of our programs are very robust on the recidivism reduction or rearrest rates, yes.
And for clarity, Judge, is this money in jeopardy? Has some of it already been cut? And why do you think, if it hasn't, that it will be cut?
Well, we haven't heard that they'll cut it. They've suggested that they will. Nobody has made, to my knowledge, has said, gone to the governor's office. Some of it is pass-through money, or nobody has
Which
said to Dallas
through
County.
The state and then goes
right,
the
so they'll give it to the governor's office and they'll spread it out across the state. So that's one way the money is distributed, or it comes directly from Bureau of Justice Assistance, perhaps, something
but
like
but
that.
But this is the list of federal dollars that's coming
that
into your office
affected.
That you think. Is
right.
That, well, are you... I guess the question here is, why do you think this will be affected? Because it's federal money, or
well, they're saying
have you
they're
got intel that this is going away?
Well, I have my intel is as good as yours. One day we're good, and one day we're bad, and the next day we're somewhere else. And so we really don't know. But the point of the conversation is, these are the things that the worst case scenario that they're saying they're going to do could be impacted by this. And so we see many, many things. I mean, we don't have to worry about criminal justice where they've pulled back on because they realize, wait a minute, we can't let that go unattended. But the point is, the bigger point is that there doesn't seem to be any analysis of where can we cut back, what should we do, can we change it, should we just cut it back, should we eliminate this, that, or the other. It's just this big hatchet that's being laid into programs and people's careers and what have you, and monies, and they're going away.
So we're hearing about cuts every day, as Jason alluded to there. You're trying to get out in front of this. You're trying to say, hey, you know, as you're swinging that axe, let's, you know, be mindful of some of these programs and what this will do if you take this money away. Are you talking to other people, whether it be your peers, other district attorneys? Are you talking with people at the state level, the federal level? Are you hearing anything?
I'm not hearing anything other than what I see on the news, because there hasn't been anything specific about this, but the threat of it. And, you know, once again, if you look just in the last 6-7 weeks, some of this stuff is being said, we're going to do this, or people stay home, but not really. We're going to cut this, we're going to eliminate this, that, and the other. Not really, at least small parts of it. So I don't know what part of this is really or not really, or somewhere in between.
Have you talked to your counterparts, though? Are they worried about
this,
too?
All of us are concerned, yes.
Yeah, they fired people and then had to hire them back, which is phenomenal. I think you're right about that. The analysis element is not, it doesn't appear to be there right now.
No, the analysis is it exists. We're going to cut it.
Yeah.
That's the analysis.
Before we dive into each of these here, Judge, what would happen if this money went away? What would happen to your office? What would happen to crime in Dallas County?
Well, in some respects, we're going to lose the ability to get in front of crime. Okay, the focus deterrence, the AIM program, and others. Okay, those are the ones where we're dealing directly with offenders, sometimes not even indicted or charged, but we take kind of control of their situation through analysis. We do risk analysis. We do substance abuse, mental health analysis. And so we try to get the person in the right programs and set them on the right path. So that would go away. So it's more likely that person in the near future or midterm future would commit another crime. And it could be a more violent crime or a violent crime that they haven't so far committed.
If just to zoom out, like, you know, 30,000 foot view here, if this federal money were to go away, would crime get worse in Dallas County?
Could. Absolutely. Yes. Because we're using it. I mean, just take the Dallas Police Department Focused Deterrence Initiative. These are people who are known criminals in the sense that they've been in the system recently and for the certain types of crimes that suggest they may commit a violent crime in the future. And so what our initiative is with DPD is to go knock on their doors and say, we are here and we want to help. And we want to subject you to testing, you know, when we say that, risk assessments, substance abuse, mental health, work, whatever it is, and we want to give you a chance. And they've become very responsive. They know we're coming. We've been doing it now for about a year and a half. And so if we can take a person who's been in the system and is likely to get back in it and keep them out, that's a crime reduction. And to the extent that we can continue to do that, it's been very successful in other cities. We're relatively new at it. It's not as expanded as it could be, but that's why we want the dollars, and we want to keep putting more money into it, more people. And so my office has actually been engaged in this effort long before this election, this most recent election. We've been working with Garland Police Department and Dallas Police Department to do this, and we like the results so far.
I think
far,
you told us that people. On a past podcast, too. Garland and, and Dallas were working together.
Garland and Dallas. Yeah. And, of course, what happens is the other police chiefs see it, and maybe they start thinking differently about how to approach some offenders.
Sure.
And I know that's going on, too. They're not a full participant in it, but it changes the manner in which they deal with some people where they're now on board to doing things to stop somebody from committing crime, whereas before they just take them to jail, file the case, and be done with it. Now you're seeing a change in culture and attitude with the police departments.
We know that these cuts that have been coming from the Trump administration have, you know, in addition to the actual effects of those cuts, have also created a lot of fear among people who are, you know, just on the edge of the cuts or outside the cuts. Are you seeing that kind of fear and sort of a distraction with people who help run these programs that you think are threatened right now, and even among the people who are helped by these programs?
Yes, both. And I tell you, the most compelling story is those who are recently retired from maybe our federal law enforcement agencies. I had a conversation with one yesterday. And the Kash Patel and the next person right under him who didn't need Senate confirmation. I mean, the fear is that the FBI will be dismantled to such an extent that we won't know what the crime is, that we won't have any way to detect something and try to stop it, that it will happen and the harm will occur. And then we don't have the resources to even address what has happened.
So you're talking about the uniform crime rate, the
well, all kinds of crime
trends, trajectories.
If we don't think about these things on a day-to-day basis.
Sure.
But there are countries, not just China and Russia, there are other countries that are actively trying to get into our banking system, our financial system, trying to get into our governmental systems, trying to get into General Motors, trying to get into all of our corporations. They are actively doing this every day. And if you think what has been promised or said, suggested as to what I will do when I run this department, especially the FBI, you are stripping away everything that we have standing between their actions and our institutions, whether they be private or governmental.
And you all work closely with the FBI.
Of course, yeah. We are part of task forces. I can't go into all the details, but I mean, we're working with most of the federal law enforcement agencies out of my office, and we have investigators, and we work together with them. They may prosecute the case, or we may prosecute the case. Mm. But you talk about Venezuelan gangs. I mean, that's a big thing, right, for the Trump administration, et cetera. And we are, you know, we're working with the federal agencies. If you strip them of their ability to monitor, to intercede, to do what's necessary, then the crime will come. And so, yes, there's a very real fear amongst my peers that crime will go up as a result of this.
So there's 6 points. That's all right. Go ahead, bud. He's apologizing to us. Was he at bread?
Yeah, he's got a huge load of buns there.
Oh, the buns. Yeah. So we're talking about $6.2 million, and it equates to 18 positions and these programs that you have set up through your office. And Jason listed the programs a minute ago. The biggest one is the sexual assault program, $1.5 million. The stats are pretty interesting on this. This project has identified 560 offenders responsible for victimizing almost 1,000 survivors. And your office is saying losing this funding would mean the elimination of a project that to date has provided justice for 379 victims.
Right.
Each one of those, I can't imagine what the individual has gone through.
Well, not only the suffering that they've gone through, but this person is who the perpetrator is still out in the community.
Mm. Now, if this money wasn't there.
That's right. I mean, we don't have the ability to investigate, to track, to research, to do the things we need to do, and then, of course, to bring it to trial. I mean, the most expensive part of that is actually when you talk about a judge, a courtroom, the clerks, the bailiffs, the lawyers, the defense lawyers, the witnesses, the experts. Then it starts, you know, that's already kind of built into the county budget. But if you don't have the ability to bring the case that far, then that person is still out there doing whatever he or she is doing. Mm. And that's the part that concerns me.
Well, the cold cases one strikes me in a similar vein. That's the biggest pot of money here that you all are worried about losing here, almost $2.4 million. This squad, this unit, has actually had results over the years, and you got so much more work to do. I mean, you've got this pipeline of work. DPD has roughly 4,000 unsolved homicides. So, you know, those cold cases, you know, the rest of us might forget about them.
Right.
But each one of those has a victim attached and that victim's family.
Well, yes, and the victim's family.
Yeah.
Right. And a perpetrator who has not been brought to justice. And
who might still be out there offending.
Right. And, you know, murder's about the worst thing you can do, right? Mm-hmm. And so if they'll kill one, will they kill two? Have they killed two? We don't know. And so we want to bring these people in and bring them to justice. We want closure for the families. And we want to make certain that we have at least stopped that person from committing more crimes. And without the ability to investigate, without the use of these funds and the staff that comes with them, we will basically be handcuffed.
Are these 18 positions any way for Dallas County to fund these or State of Texas to fund these, or would you have to get rid of these positions?
Well, possibly, but the county is saying that it's Health and Human Services. The number I've heard is 90% funded with federal money. And that's a lot of money. I don't know how many millions, how many tens of millions, but...
So others might be scrambling to cover their own budgets.
A whole lot more money than what we're talking about for us. Mm-hmm. And so if they follow through on what they're saying, at worst case scenario, either we're not going to have Health and Human Services, we're going to have a diminished district attorney's office, so there goes criminal justice and health. And the only way to make up the money is to raise taxes on the local residents.
And there's already a cap on that.
Well, yep, right.
Yeah. The AIM court is another one. I didn't know what the AIM court is. It's a specialty court. Jason mentioned
Youth offenders.
So that's almost $1 million in jeopardy right there. Tell us what this does, what that money does from the feds.
Well, so we have staff, and every person who comes into that court has, it's not a criminal trespass or some low-level case. It's something of a felony level. It could be a violent case. And once again, we subject them to the same process, that is risk assessment, substance abuse, mental health, and all other things that may impact that person. And we have staff that will then implement programs with that. We have peer counselors and what have you. And so what we've seen is doing things that way in a very focused way with a judge and a dedicated staff and consistency is when we get 74% reduction in recidivism.
Wow,
and
that's
those
huge.
Are yes, and those are kids. I mean, everything that we focus on with this money, everything that we are engaged in. We have some programs that are not federal money, so they're not on this list, where we have a 91% reduction in recidivism. So Divert Court no longer gets federal money. That's the one I started in 98. That has a 68% reduction in recidivism.
Wow.
So everything we do by this same method, we don't change up the method. We may change up some details. We get new information, new research. We may change this, that, and the other. But the basic method is the same, and it reduces crime. And so if all of this money goes away and we're unable to do that, to some extent, we're going to allow violent crime to occur. And that's what we're trying to get away from. And let me just throw a pitch in for DPD and Eddie Garcia. He brought to town for the first time an evidence-based, a research-based crime plan from UTSA. And he put it in. And the criminologists worked with him and his staff and us. We all worked together. And you saw the result. We were the first major city to have a reduction in violent crime. We were the first major city to have it 2 years in a row. Okay, now murders were kind of staying steady there for a while. Now they're down. Okay, but it's this focus and it's the money that goes with it. It's the focus deterrence that helps us bring all of the components of this together and bring down crime.
One of the other things you're worried about here is losing about $800,000 for the post-conviction DNA testing.
Yes.
That gets at a lot of different things, doesn't it? Because, you know, sometimes you have someone who's wrongfully convicted. You can detect that with this.
Right.
But then you can take it that extra step further and maybe use, you know, advances in technology, test the DNA from a crime scene again, and possibly not only let the person go who didn't do it, but find the person who did.
Yes. In fact, we have a recent case that way. We had a man in prison. He said, I didn't do it. The evidence showed, everybody said, that the person who did the killing was wearing a Stars jersey. Well, not too far from that area, there was a Stars jersey found in the street by Baylor Hospital. So this happened in Deep Ellum. So it's not too far away. And it had a lot of blood on it. And we did some testing. But the testing was not as robust and effective as it is today. And so we retested it and found two different DNAs, and we were able to determine one person. It was a woman, but we know a man did the killing. Well, the woman gave us, suggested who else's DNA was on it, and we were able to go to another state and surreptitiously get DNA. And then once we had enough for that, we had enough for an arrest warrant. And then once we got the person arrested, we took the sample. And bang, it was him. And this other person had been in prison who was innocent. So now that person's out. He's been exonerated, and we are prosecuting the other person.
But there's more money for post-conviction DNA testing. I mean, don't you get it from different sources as well?
Well, you know, we have a county crime lab, so that's, and they do DNA testing.
Yeah.
But this is to expand that. You know, when you, and then the other thing, too, is sometimes it's not that easy. We have to do forensic genetic DNA.
Yeah.
And that takes a long time. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of investigation to do that. So this money frees us up from here to go to there or from there to go to here. Whatever it is, it adds to our ability to investigate.
Let's do behavioral health. This is the one that you were talking about as a pass-through. It goes through the state and then comes to you all. You're talking about almost $500,000 there. You know, we always hear about mental health in the wake of, you know, big tragedies and how we need to invest more in that and so forth. What is this behavioral health component addressing? You're worried about this funding going away.
Well, so we have a very robust division, mental health division, in the district attorney's office. When I got there, we had it, but it was not robust. And it was divided up between three supervisors, none of them adequately trained, trained to some extent, but not fully. And they each had their own idea of how it should work. So I put it under one person, the person who had the most experience and the most training. And what we do is look at the cases, see if they qualify, see if the person has a serious mental illness. Now, we're not talking about light depression, right? We can move with that one. but something more serious. And it could be bipolar, it could be schizophrenia, could be things like that. And so what we do is we get a full psychological eval that gives recommendations. Mm-hmm. And then we go through the community. Sometimes it's in criminal justice, sometimes it's in the outer community, sometimes it's Parkland or whatever. And then we subject that person to services under a contract, so to speak, mm-hmm. or maybe they're on probation. And so we will see them through. It may be 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. We've had people who have been started in the program, had a serious case, and we did all of that, and they went to college, they finished, and they're gainfully employed, and then we release them from the obligations of the contract or the probation.
And they're no longer a worry.
They're no longer a worry. And so then we studied that. Is this being effective or not, or are we just wasting our time? And what we found was the way we approached it, since I've been in office, is we have a 15% rearrest rate. Okay, so you said, what does that mean? Well, the national average for that type of person in the criminal justice system is 50 to 70%.
Oh, wow.
So you can see how effective we are in eliminating crime by working with the individual in methods that are tested, research-based, and we get superior results. Mm.
So criminal justice reform, as you well know, is a bipartisan issue. I mean, I think of Senator Cornyn, Senator Cruz, efforts that they've made. Have you been on the phone in the last 6 weeks calling D.C. saying, hey, listen, make sure you know, let's don't cut some of this stuff here because it's actually working in Dallas and in other counties in Texas?
So I have a very good working relationship with Senator Cornyn. And your specific question on the phone with him in the last 6 weeks, no.
Texting?
However, he has been in town, and we have discussed. He and I have actually known each other for many decades.
Okay.
He was a judge a long time ago when I was. Mm-hmm. So we've known each other. And so through his staff or through him and just conversations, he understands where this is. And I've discussed that these are important programs. I don't know where he's going to come down on it. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, they've pretty much voted in all these cabinet folks who will have the final say, I guess, or at least put their names on the paper to do what they're going to do.
But Congress has allocated the money, right?
Well, that's another question. You know, can they cut money that's already been allocated?
Sure.
And, you know, we're hearing that the president and his staff say, of course. And then, of course, there's the other side that said, no, you cannot change what Congress has allocated. They may not reallocate it.
Right.
But you can't just cut it off because you feel like it.
Mm. Are you fascinated watching that? I mean, you're not a constitutional lawyer, but you're a lawyer. You're a former judge. You're a DA.
Oh, I am fascinated watching it. I'm going to get a little bit off of our direct subject,
yeah.
But the issue of immunity for a president, okay? We have people who have represented themselves on the Supreme Court, and rightfully so. They can take the position that I'm a textualist, I'm an originalist, etc. If it's not there, it doesn't exist. So one of the ways that we look at what did somebody mean when they enacted a constitution or a law, what did they say and what did they not say? So when they put the constitution together, they put legislative immunity but not presidential. So the ordinary way of looking at that is they didn't want the president to have immunity, but that's not the ruling we got. Mm-hmm. And so it begs the question, how much of a textualist and an originalist are you if you would otherwise analyze something like this and come to a different conclusion, but on this issue you go with immunity when it's nowhere in the Constitution and it was addressed in another part in a co-equal branch. If they wanted it, they would have put it in. That's the traditional way of looking at it, the more conservative way of looking at it, and so we have a different result.
Mm-hmm. We have a Republican on our political program, TV program, Inside Texas Politics this week, who says what's constitutional is determined by 9 people at the time.
Well, that's what you're hearing.
It's a good point.
Yes.
Good point with that. And yeah. My last question, Judge, is I don't want to overstate or misstate this, but $6.2 million, the results that you guys have shown that you can do with this money, how big of a deal would this be if you lost it?
Well, it'd be a big deal to us. It'd be a big deal to public safety. Would it turn the county upside down? No. But when we are making progress, you know what that does? That gets more money the next time, and then you expand. And it also tells the county next to us or beyond that or somewhere else in Texas, hey, here's an approach that's reducing crime. And so it's building. I mean, for example, divert court. We have 300 or so of those type courts in the state of Texas, but it started right here in Dallas County. And we took that 68% reduction in rearrest. And by the way, every dollar spent for that program, we avoided $9.34 in cost. And those were studies done by SMU, Psychology and Economics. And today we have laws that require those courts, and we have funding coming from the governor's office. And we have changed the way we look at this. We closed 15 prisons. You know how many billions of taxpayer dollars that saved? So
and inmates as well.
And inmates.
Who were in there.
Absolutely. So, you know, sometimes you say, well, it's only 6 million, it's only Dallas County. But when you think about the impact that that has and the change in the culture of criminal justice, to look at the mentally ill and not see the jail as their appropriate place, but medicine and techniques and therapy, et cetera, and we can avoid that. But the thing we really avoided was another crime. And
so
that's the
six,
most important thing.
And you think the 6 million saves a lot more money?
Oh,
than
absolutely.
You get.
Everything that we've done, we've, to the extent that we can, have done a cost-benefit analysis. And we're in the $9, $8, $7, $10 avoided for every dollar spent.
I'm just keeping count here. Jason's last question had two babies while you were answering it, and so there were two more. I wanted to ask you, if this money goes away, these are investigators that we're talking about.
Yes,
okay?
And victim
money,
advocates.
Yeah, if this money goes away and that work stops, does that amount to, quote-unquote, defunding the police?
It's so to the extent that money would go to the police departments for, like, focus deterrence, yes, it would. I don't think it would make anybody's job go away, but it would make that assignment go away. To the extent that it funds investigators and advocates in our office, yes, they will go away, definitely.
But the end result could be, if crime shoots up here locally, I mean, does it concern you that politically that would be hung on you? Even if you weren't the one who made the cuts, they would go, it's that weak liberal DA in Dallas.
We have experience with that. So people don't realize violent crime started going up in Dallas County and actually around the nation in about 2016. And let me say this. When violent crime is going up or down, criminologists do not know why. Okay? They have to look at the trends and look at all the things that were impacting culture, society, this place versus that place, to get an idea of it. But nonetheless, crime started going up, violent crime starting up in 2016. I get in office in 2019, and it's all my fault. Okay, now, interestingly, violent crime is going down, murders are going down, and I don't hear that I have anything to do with it.
You've been talking to Chief Garcia for a lot here, too, Judge.
Yeah.
But
I do think that the greater emphasis on crime suppression happens with police on the streets and the strategies. And look what happened. We got a new police chief who brought in criminologists, who brought in a plan, and they faithfully adhered to the plan, and things change before they change anywhere else in the United States. It's right here in Dallas.
I'll finish with this, since I get three, since you had three. You know, I know a diverse group of people. I know plenty of people who politically feel very differently than you do, and they love what they're seeing. They love these totals that they're seeing being cut and the job cuts that are happening and so forth. What do you say to the people who are just, I mean, sitting there, you know, screaming, you know, amen to the TV and clapping when they're seeing these cuts?
Well, so we've had presidential administrations who have done similar things in the past, but it's been after study and what would be the implications and where would the money, if it's not there, could the community support it on its own, et cetera. I mean, we've seen it in both Bush administrations. We saw it in the Clinton administration. We've seen this before. What this is, like I said, just taking a hatchet to things and just whacking away at them without any thought as to what the implications are. Just like this. It doesn't seem, $6 million is next to nothing in Washington. However, when we talk about fighting crime, holding people accountable, finding out who murdered somebody, that's a big deal right here. And if it's replicated in other cities and other communities across the United States, it is a big deal. That money starts adding up, and the implications for it in public safety start to add up. And there could be some of these things, not just local DAs, but once again, I want to go back to the FBI. That who prosecutes those cases? The U.S. attorney. Yeah. Who oversees that? The attorney general. And so if you're not in looking at this from the standpoint of how can I suppress crime, if your first focus is how can I get back at those I'm mad at, and how can I just chop down government so that I can make room for tax cuts? If that's your focus, then you're going to lose the point of the money, which is to suppress or detect crime. And that's what I think is where we're getting mixed up. We're going too fast, too far. I'm not saying that we shouldn't cut back here, there, and other places, of course. We always lose track of where we are and need to make adjustments. We always do. But the way this is going, and this is just a small example of what the implications are for the way this is being approached.
Strong finish, Wheeler.
It was.
Huh?
Yeah, wow. I'm done. I'm finally done.
your entire dossier you have here for Judge Cruzzo. Judge, thanks so much for the insight. Did not realize that this was going on. And when we see these headlines that, you know, the president is signing these executive orders, he's making these cuts, Elon Musk is out and about cutting different departments, it's easy to get lost in the headlines and not realize how it comes down and physically affects where we live.
Right.
And that's what we appreciate.
Judge,
focus on that.
Thanks so much for being on with us, and we're going to have you back. I know, you know, the office is busy these days, but you made the mistake before we started recording of mentioning something else.
Another topic
that I think is fascinating about juvenile justice in particular, and I think it would just blow a lot of people away. So we're going to have you back for that.
Absolutely, and I think it's something that, once again, it's been touched on from this angle and that angle, but not put together. And there's a lot more to it than even what the newspaper and your station has been able to cover. It's just more complicated. And so I'd love to be back in the near future to talk about that and let the community know where we were and where we are. And where we are is a lot better than where we were.
This sounds like it could be a case study.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll get it on the books. Also, a special shout-out to Community Beer Company in Dallas. Fantastic place.
I had the Texas Lager.
We didn't talk about that at the beginning, did we?
No, we didn't. You said it looked like a champagne, a flute of champagne.
Yeah, and I see you really like it. You're drinking a lot of it, too. I had the house beer here, and, of course.
Well, we want everybody to know the DA has good old tap water.
and not just tap water. Neat.
No ice.
No ice. I like that.
Judge, thanks again.
Thank you all.
Okay, y'all, the conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're @Yolitics.